evening, friends, and welcome to Sleepy Time Tales, a podcast aimed at helping you to get a good night's sleep. Before we get on with the show, I'd like to take a couple of minutes of your time and ask for a little bit of support. The show is brought to you, as always, by supporters on Patreon. I'm hearing from more people all the time how valuable they find the show, and those supporters who have the means to help fund it, to keep it going, and help me to reach new audiences are very much appreciated. So if you're making use of Sleepy Time Tales regularly to help you to deal with sleeplessness, and you have the urge to support the show, and of course, if you have the means, please check out patreon.com/sleepytimetales, or go to the link in the show notes or from the website to take a look at what you can get for your monthly contribution. This week I'd like to welcome Michaela to the Patreon family. Thanks very much to you for signing up for your monthly support, and thank you for your help in keeping the show going. But for some people, maybe committing to something on a monthly basis seems a little bit of a big ask. So if you want to make a single contribution, then you can check out buymeacoffee.com/sleepytimetales, also linked in the show notes, where you can make one-off contributions without even needing to sign up for the service. I'd also like to thank Adele, who made a once-off contribution through the tip jar on the website. I'm very grateful for the support, and here's to well-rested nights for you. Another huge way you can help, though, is to spread the word. If there is someone in your life who you think will benefit from listening to Sleepy Time Tales, just let them know. If you recommend the show on social media, please make sure to tag me in so that I know and I can thank you. That's at Sleepy Time Tales on Instagram or Twitter. Also, of course, need to shout out the music, which is Sweet Night and Friends by Kumiku. Their music is available on their website at loyaltyfreakmusic.com. I've linked their website in the show notes, as they've got some very cool stuff that they release under various names that I do definitely recommend you check out. And thank you for taking the time. Let's get back to the show. Do you find your mind plagued with the stresses of modern life, especially when the lights are out and you're trying to get a restful night? Does your spinning mind keep you awake? Follow my voice down the path towards a good night's rest. Listen to me tell a story that will keep your mind from wandering to your daytime problems, the ones you can't solve right now and will be easier to solve well rested. Listen to my voice and allow yourself to drift, following the twists and turns of the story, but slowly letting go and drifting into sleep. So what exactly is Sleepy Time Tales? What is it for? It's a bit of a strange idea after all. A podcast that you're supposed to fall asleep to. But in the 21st century, and particularly the year of 2021, lack of sleep is a health crisis, and this is a podcast that is intended to help those that it can to get a restful night. Do you find yourself lying awake at night, with your mind spinning and your emotions in turmoil with anxieties of 21st century life? Do you wake up in the middle of the night and find yourself not quite able to doze back off at 3 a.m.? I'm here to help. My name is Dave, and I'm your narrator, here to help you into a restful night. Sleepy Time Tales is intended to be used as a distraction to what keeps you awake at night, or maybe sometimes more like background noise, or even just simply company. That's why I make these episodes quite long, so that I'm here for you without any pressure of the end coming up anytime soon. Now, as far as I know, there's a couple of different ways to engage with the show. For me, I need something to focus on. A story or an event that lets me keep my mind on a specific point, to stop it from spinning out into stress and anxieties. To focus just enough not to resist the embrace of a night's sleep when it comes for me. But maybe there's a second thing you need, a second way of engaging with it. Maybe you just need a background noise, some kind of white noise, or like people listen to the sound of the rain or wind in the trees, or maybe you just need a boring dude droning on in the background. But however you engage with the show, it's important that you don't force sleep. Just keep a light mental grip on the thread of the story and my voice as we go along, and allow sleep to come for you. Now, obviously, I'm hoping that you're asleep before I get to the end of the episode, but it's important you don't feel pressurized. If this is your first night, the chances are pretty good it won't actually even work for you. Odds are it'll take two, probably three nights to get used to listening to my voice, the strangeness of my accent, or maybe just the strangeness of the whole idea of having some dude talk to you while you're sleeping. Also, maybe you have a different kind of insomnia, and maybe one episode just isn't long enough for you. Because my problem isn't so much going to sleep these days, it's more that I wake up in the middle of the night and struggle to go back. So what I do with my sleep podcasts is I download a whole bunch of them, of episodes, and I put them all in a playlist, and I start with the latest one, and I let them run through the night. That way, when I wake up at 3 a.m., it's still running, and if my earbuds are popped out, I pop them back in and go back to sleep. Sometimes even I find myself waking up 30 minutes or 60 minutes before my alarm, and I do the exact same thing. And you may want to ask me why, what's the point of going back to sleep when you've got 30 minutes left? And I've got to tell you that sometimes that 30 minutes is the most restful part of my night. There's something about allowing yourself to sleep right before the alarm that is just deeply satisfying on a whole new level. But it's very important as you listen that you just try to relax. If you're new to the show and prone to late nights lying staring at the ceiling, this may seem strange to you, so give it a chance. Because I'm here to work with you, to create a safe space, a cocoon in which you can curl up and allow nature to take its course. So if you're still with me, thank you for staying. If you're already asleep, we'll chat again soon. And of course, you aren't hearing me, except maybe in a dream. General Instructions for the Guidance of Post Office Inspectors in the Dominion of Canada by Alexander Campbell. Chapter 1. General Instructions. Number 1. You're required personally to superintend the performance of the routine work of your office and see that it is properly done. 2. This routine work should be suitably and fairly apportioned amongst your clerks, each clerk under your superintendence being responsible for the duty assigned to him. You will, after fair warning, report to the Postmaster General any clerk who fails correctly and efficiently to perform this duty. 3. Carefully superintend the working of the department in all its branches within the limits of your division. As, however, it is important that the operations of the department should be carried on under one uniform plan throughout the Dominion, do not make any alterations in the system of doing the work without the permission first obtained of the Postmaster General. Endeavour to instill into all persons connected with the department in your division the importance of harmonious working together for the good of the service, and of each in his own sphere performing the duties assigned to him in an intelligent and thorough manner. All letters received on official business should be carefully and promptly attended to. All matters referred to you from the department at Ottawa should be disposed of within the least possible delay. Provision should be made for the performance of the ordinary routine work of your office when you are absent, under the superintendence of your senior clerk. No portion of your work should be allowed to fall into arrear. If it should do so, however, from circumstances beyond your control, you will at once report the fact to the Postmaster General. See that the time bills and mail transfer receipts are properly examined and filed away every day. A separate pigeonhole should be provided for each set of time bills and transfer receipts, the pigeonholes being arranged and labeled in alphabetical order. When fines should, in your opinion, be imposed upon railway mail clerks, clerks in city offices, and other officers in the deploy of the department, full particulars of each case should be communicated to the Postmaster General, and his authority for the imposition of the fine obtained. Make once in every 3 months a regular and thorough inspection of all the details of account and general business in each city post office in your division, without any prearranged date or notice of the time at which such inspections will be made. The inspection should, however, take place on the first of a month, so that the accountant may be able to verify from your report the entries in the accounts of the postmaster for the month preceding. In making these inspections, you must verify the stamp account of the office. Personally count the stock on hand and see that it agrees with the amount stated in the postmaster's stamp account, made up to the last day of the month, to which account you should attach your signature. Satisfy yourself that all other items of revenue, such as postage on unpaid matter, on insufficiently paid matter, and on newspapers, also rent of boxes and drawers, etc., are duly brought into account. Certify the numbers of both boxes and drawers rented out at the time of your inspection. Investigate the state of the money order and savings bank business, and see that the regulations and instructions are closely adhered to. Inquire into the conduct and efficiency of each person employed. See that all the work of the letter carrier's branch is promptly and accurately performed. That all the carriers are supplied with and wear uniforms. That an account is kept by the postmaster of the cost thereof, and that the outlay incurred does not exceed the amount allowed by the Postmaster General. Forward to the Postmaster General the result of your inspection as promptly as possible, giving clear and full information on the several points inquired into. See that all errors and irregularities are reported to you by the postmaster or railway mail clerk, by whom observed, and that prompt steps are taken for their correction. Irregularities of whatever kind should be promptly inquired into and corrected. If overlooked, they always have a tendency to increase. Investigate thoroughly all cases of complaint. Obtain a clear statement of the charges made and of the facts which can be proved in support of these charges, and from these facts, draw your conclusions. In cases where the evidence is conflicting, the characters and antecedents of the parties concerned may probably be important elements for consideration. In making investigations, bear in mind that any person who has been detected in one dishonest act may probably have been guilty of other dishonest acts, and that your inquiry should therefore cover not only the particular case under investigation, but other irregular or fraudulent proceedings which it is possible may have been committed by the party suspected. This point should be particularly remembered in regard to officers transacting money order and savings bank business. You have authority, for the purpose of any official inquiry or investigation it may be your duty to make, to apply to any judge of the Superior or Exchequer Court of Canada, or of the Superior Court of the Province of Quebec, or of any one of the superior courts of either of the provinces, or to any judge or stipendary magistrate in and of the territories, for an order that a subpoena be issued from the court or magistrate, commanding any person therein named to appear before you at the time and place mentioned in the subpoena, and then and there to testify to all matters within his knowledge, and if so required, to produce any document or thing he may have in his possession relative to such inquiry or investigation. And any witness may be summoned from any part of Canada, within or without the ordinary jurisdiction of the court, judge, or magistrate issuing the subpoena, any reasonable travelling expenses being tendered to the witnesses so subpoenaed at the time of such service. And any person thus summoned who may neglect or refuse to appear, or refuse to give evidence, or to produce the papers demanded of him, may, by order of the court, judge, or magistrate who issued the subpoena, be taken into custody and imprisoned in the common jail of the locality, as for contempt of court, for a period not exceeding 14 days. You have also authority to examine any person on oath or affirmation on any matter pertinent to any investigation you may make, and such oath or affirmation may be administered by you to any person you may so desire to examine. You and any officer under you having the rank of Assistant PO Inspector have authority to require any postmaster or assistant postmaster in any post offices, mail contractor, or other person in the employment of, or service of, or undertaking to perform any duty or work for the Post Office Department, to make and sign an oath or declaration in the following form and to a like effect. I, insert name of the person in the capacity in which he is employed in or by the post office, do solemnly and sincerely promise and swear, or declare, if the person is one entitled to declare instead of taking an oath in civil cases, that I will faithfully perform all the duties required of me by my employment in the service of the post office, and will abstain from everything forbidden by the laws for the establishment and government of the post office departments in Canada, so help me God. When a formal investigation is necessary, always give due notice to the complainant or complainants and the party or parties complained against of the time and place at which the investigation will be held. In your reports to the Postmaster General of the results of an investigation, state whether the inquiry made was personal or by correspondence. State also clearly in the proper order all the facts bearing on the case and the conclusions which these facts appear to justify. In reporting on cases of a confidential matter in which it is not desirable that the fact should be made public, mark the word confidential both on the report and on the cover in which it is transmitted. In all reports in which a previous report is referred to, state in addition to the number and date of the report referred to, its general purport. In all reports, post offices should be called by their official names, and not by the name by which they may be known in their locality. This rule applies especially to the Maritime Provinces. It is desirable that you should make yourself acquainted, as far as may be practicable, with the general character and financial standing of each postmaster in your division, his charge of money order or savings bank duties, and in any case where you have reason for suspecting the possibility of irregular practices, or a disposition to withhold, even for short periods, post office monies. A confidential report should be made to the Postmaster General, in order that a close supervision may be kept by the superintendent on the returns and remittances received from such postmasters. In cases of doubt, always ask for instructions from the Postmaster General, by letter if time permits, if not, by telegraph. When absolutely necessary, make use of the telegraph, compressing your message into as few words as are consistent with clearness of meaning. Do not, however, use the telegraph in cases where a letter will answer all the purposes required. Observe in all matters connected with the department as strict an economy as is consistent with efficient performance of the service. Do not in any case recommend additional expenditure unless the circumstances appear fully to justify it. No outlay, whether for alteration in a mail service or for repairs, improvements or fittings, must be incurred without the specific authority first obtained of the Postmaster General. In every case, application for this authority must be accompanied by a full description of the work to be done and an estimate of the probable expenditure involved. No person must be employed, even in a temporary capacity, without the sanction of the Postmaster General previously obtained. Furnish full particulars of any changes, especially of distribution to inspectors of other divisions, which may be affected in any way by these changes, and cordially cooperate with them in the consideration and carrying out of any improvements which may generally benefit the service. Make yourself thoroughly conversant with all acts of the Dominion Parliament relating in any way to the Post Office Service, and with all regulations relating to the Post Office Department, as well as with all the details connected with its operation. You have authority when you find it necessary to suspend a postmaster, clerk, or any other employee in your division. All the other circumstances, however, should be at once reported to the Postmaster General. When it is noticed that postage stamps attached to letters or other postal matter frequently fall off, or if it should be found that the stamps are insufficiently gummed or badly perforated, the fact should be reported to the Postmaster General, the name of the office at which the posting took place being given. In closing a post office, or in transferring a post office to a newly appointed postmaster, always see that the accounts are made up to the day of closing or transfer, and that the balance due thereon is paid and deposited in the bank to the credit of the Postmaster General. The assumption by an incoming postmaster of a balance due by his predecessor is objectionable. The amount due from the outgoing postmaster should in all cases be deposited as above to the credit of the Postmaster General. Except in very special cases, the opening and closing of offices should take effect on the first day of each month. In the case of the transfer of a money order office, the transfer receipt should be sent to the superintendent of the money order branch at Ottawa by the first mail after the transfer takes effect. Immoral publications and other articles, the transmission of which through the mail are prohibited, and which are sent to you by the railway clerks in your division, should be at once forwarded to the Postmaster General. All forms, books, stationery, etc. required for your office must be applied for by requisition to the Postmaster General, in accordance with instructions contained in the catalogue of articles in stock in the printing and supply branch of the department, a copy of which has been furnished to you. If any of the regulations laid down in these instructions cannot be carried out in your division, you will make a confidential report to the Postmaster General, stating the reasons why this cannot be done. Section 2. Arrangement of Papers. All papers and correspondence referring to the same case should be kept together. No letters or papers should be put away until the matter to which they refer is finally disposed of. Separate pigeonholes should be provided for all papers and letters according to their classification, so that when required, they can be readily found. The following classification is recommended for papers not finally disposed of: papers in reference to applications for new post offices, papers in reference to postmaster's bonds for execution, papers in reference to applications for alterations in mail routes, papers in reference to railway mail service, papers in reference to advertisement of mail contracts, papers in reference to execution of mail contracts, papers in reference to arrears due from postmasters and ex-postmasters, papers in reference to cases of supposed loss or of abstractions from letters, papers in reference to distribution, papers in reference to matters requiring personal inquiry, letters from secretary or awaiting answers, letters from postmasters, contractors, and the public awaiting answers. For papers finally disposed of: mail contracts in force alphabetically arranged, mail contracts terminated alphabetically arranged, postmaster's bonds in force alphabetically arranged, postmaster's bonds terminated alphabetically arranged, letters from secretary arranged according to number, letters from post office department not numbered, letters from post office inspectors, letters from postmasters, contractors, and the public alphabetically arranged, there being a separate pigeonhole for each letter of the alphabet, letters in reference to cases of actual losses or of abstractions from letters, papers in reference to cases of supposed losses or of abstractions in which the inquiry instituted shows that no actual loss or abstraction occurred, papers in reference to accounts included in monthly requisitions, papers in reference to arrears due from postmasters, papers in reference to railway mail service, papers in reference to distribution. Section 3. Books and Records. The books to be kept are as follows: book for press copies of reports for Postmaster General, book for press copies of such other letters, etc., as it may be necessary to copy, record of letters and references from the secretary, record of applications for lost letters, etc., record of actual losses of letters and abstractions of articles of value from letters, journal of travel and proceedings, forms bound up, conduct return book, press copies, order book for instructions to railway mail clerks in which should be entered the address of each clerk, book for recording numbers of miles travelled by railway mail clerks, record of errors made by railway mail clerks as shown by labels on packages which they have made up and which should be forwarded to you by the mail clerks or postmasters by whom opened, as also of other errors made by the railway mail clerks reported to you. Record of mail contracts. Record of postmasters' bonds. Record of dates of expiration of contract. Variation of expenditure book. Record of transfer of offices. Salary pay list book. Contractors' pay book. Book for the record of requisitions to the Postmaster General for payment of travelling charges and all other official expenses, with exception of salaries and mail services. Arrears book. Register of employees attached to your office, including railway mail clerks in your division or under your superintendence. In the book, a page should be devoted to each employee in which it should be recorded name, date, and place of birth, religion, class, salary, date of promotion, increase of salary, transfer, suspension, cases in which the employee has received special commendation or censure, date of resignation or removal, or any other particular of which it is desirable a memorandum should be kept. Cash book for entry of all monies received on post office account with manner of disposal thereof. Money order checkbook. Passbook in which to record all registered letters dispatched. Order book with margin to be used in all cases when an order is given for any article required for official use. Telegraph book with margin on which should be recorded copies of all telegraphs sent on official business. Corresponding officers book showing name of office with which each of your division exchanges direct mails. Book for recording changes in distribution. Book for daily entry of time bills on ordinary mail routes. Record of new offices established, of old offices closed, and changes in names of offices. Book for requisitions for printing and stationery, blank forms bound up. Card book for copies of notices inviting tenders for contracts. Card book for department orders and circulars. Card book for time bills of railways, etc. It is very necessary that entries of all transactions should be promptly made in the books provided for their record. The keeping of memoranda on pieces of paper or trusting to memory in such matters is very objectionable. All printing and binding required both by your own office and city or other offices must be done on requisition to the department at Ottawa. Further, all stationery required both by your own and city or other offices must be obtained by requisition in the proper form to the Postmaster General. The number of the articles are shown by the official catalogue, being in all cases given. Section 4. Returns to be made to the Department at Ottawa. The returns required by the Department at Ottawa should be reckoned punctually as follows. Pay lists for salaries to be forwarded so as to reach Ottawa not later than the 23rd of each month. Should any fines be imposed or stoppage of pay take place after the list has been dispatched, the fact should be communicated to the Postmaster General by telegraph. In every case in which a new name appears on the pay list, or in which there has been any fine or alteration of salary, the number and date of the letter conveying the Postmaster General's authority, therefore, must be written at the foot of the list. Pay lists for mail services. Accompanied by the necessary receipts or vouchers to be transmitted on the last day of each quarter, and to include all services performed during the quarter. If the exact amount due to a contractor cannot be ascertained, the service should be entered in the proper place and the figures left blank. The voucher in such case should be transmitted to the accountant as soon afterwards as possible. The figure columns in the pay list should always be added up, and the total entered in ink. The distances entered in the vouchers or receipts for mail services should agree with the distances entered in the variation returns. Return of variations in the mail service expenditure to be transmitted on the last day of each month, and to include all new contracts and mail services, all renewals and transfers of existing contracts, and all variations in mail service taking effect during the month. As checks are issued to the contractors on the entries in the pay lists and variation returns, it is necessary that they should be corrected in every particular, and that both names and figures should be distinctly written. Return of new post routes established and of post routes discontinued, to be transmitted not later than the 7th day of each month, and to include all such changes in mail services taking effect during the previous month. Return of new post offices established, post offices closed, and changes of names in post offices, to be retransmitted not later than the 7th day of each month, and to include all operations under this head up to the first day of the month on which the return is sent in, inclusive. Weekly journals of railway mail clerks in your division to be transmitted every Tuesday morning. Return of losses and abstractions of money and other articles from letters to be transmitted on the first day of each month. This return can be made out from the record of applications for missing letters, and should include all supposed cases of lost and abstraction entered in the record during the month which have not been erased, in accordance with instructions under the head of Cases of Loss and Abstraction. Those cases not erased should be consecutively numbered, and the number entered in the return. In the event of a letter being reported as lost, which is subsequently found, you should state in the next month's return, "No, reported in the return for the month of, found," and erase from your record of applications for lost letters. Return of transfer from post offices to be transmitted by the 10th day of each month, and to include all transfers taking effect up to the first of the month on which the return is sent in, inclusive. Journal of travel and proceedings not later than 6 days after the expiration of each month. Requisition for payment of miscellaneous expenses to include travelling allowances, telegraph bills, and all outlays, except salaries and contractors' pay, not later than 6 days after the expiration of each month. Only one requisition should be sent in each month. Each requisition should be numbered consecutively throughout each fiscal year. Number 1 should be the first requisition made, for accounts on the dates of which should embrace the month of July. On each voucher, it must be stated clearly for what object the expense has been incurred. Further, each account must bear a certificate as to its correctedness in the handwriting of the inspector, and must be accompanied by an official voucher on which must be written the number and date of the authority for the expense. Tradesmen's accounts should be included in the requisition made for the last month in each quarter. All outstanding amounts should be included in the requisition for the last month in each quarter, as it is very objectionable that accounts for expenses incurred in one quarter should be included in the requisition made for any following quarter. The vouchers for travelling expenses claimed by officers not entitled to a per diem allowance should bear your certificate that the amount claimed is the amount of the actual expenses incurred. Vouchers for telegraph accounts should bear your certificate that all the telegrams charged for have been sent and received on official business. All accounts for advertising must be accompanied by copies of the advertisement for which the accounts are rendered. In making out the requisition, the accounts should be entered according to their amounts, the largest amount being entered first and the smallest amount last. The accounts should be numbered consecutively in the above order on the back. The number on each account should correspond with the number of its entry in the requisition. The accounts and vouchers themselves should be placed and forwarded in the order in which entered. It is very important that the checks received in payment of accounts should be promptly acknowledged by returning the form sent with them. And when paid, the vouchers should always be returned with a printed letter of advice, in the same order in which entered the requisition, so that they can be readily checked. One copy of each time bill in use should be forwarded on the first day of each quarter. The bills sent to be classified according to frequency of service and arranged alphabetically. Accompanying these bills should be sent a memorandum of all changes made during the past month in the bills used. Returns of railway and steamboat service to be sent on the first of each month. These returns to be personally examined by the inspector before they are sent in. and your return of all cases of loss or abstraction to be transmitted on or before the 1st October in each year. This return should include all cases of loss or abstraction occurring within the year and the 30th June last past, as well as all such cases occurring at the end of the preceding year, as it may not have been possible to include that year's return. Each case should be entered in order according to the date on which the letter was posted. The return should be divided into two parts. The first part should include only registered letters, the cases of entire loss of the letter being entered separately from cases of abstraction of the contents of the letter. The second part should include only unregistered letters, the cases of loss being also entered separately from the cases of abstraction. This return should be very carefully prepared. It constitutes the material from which the annual statement for Parliament has to be compiled, and the explanations given under the head of Results of Proceedings should be such as fully to justify every step taken during and subsequent to the investigations instituted. A return of the mail service in operation in your division on the 1st day of July in each year to be transmitted by the 1st of the following month. The services in this return to be entered alphabetically and to be classified according to frequency of service, the distances between the termini of several routes also to be accurately stated. Suspended winter services to be given as a supplement. Section 5. Salaries and allowances. With the exception of postmasters in the cities, postmasters' salaries are based on a commission on the amount of postage on matter prepaid by stamps and posted at their offices. Viz. 40% on the first $800 per annum or $200 per quarter, and 25% on the balance, with a minimum salary of $10 per annum in cases where the postage on the matter prepaid by stamps is less than $25. These salaries are to be revised every 2 years, but in very special cases where there have been an exceptional increase of revenue or work, the case may be reported on for the Postmaster General's consideration. In cases where the postmaster is required to perform duty between the hours of 10 p.m. and 5 a.m., 50% instead of 40% is allowed on the first $800 per annum, or $200 per quarter of prepaid postage revenue, provided always that the Postmaster General considers that there are sufficient grounds for such an increased allowance. Allowances for forward duty are made to postmasters who are required to remail letters and papers for and from other offices. The amount of remuneration should be regulated according to the number of offices for and from which the postmaster distributes mails, the number of mails per week dispatched to and received therefrom, the average amount of matter remailed each week, the number of ordinary letters, registered letters, postal cards, newspapers, books and parcels, etc. It must be clearly understood that in the above must not be included the matter posted or delivered at the office to which the allowance forward duty is proposed to be made. The time occupied in the duty and the number of persons required to accomplish it, the hours at which the duty is performed. In no case, however, should the allowance for forward duty excel 12% of the revenue of the offices, the correspondence for and from which it is distributed. When in consequence of any change in the mail arrangements, the forward duty performed by postmaster is either increased or diminished, you should at once report to the Postmaster General what corresponding increase or diminution in the forward allowance should be made, so that the necessary adjustment may take effect from the date on which the change goes into operation. All reports regarding forward allowance should be accompanied by tracing from the postal map showing the distributing office and the offices dependent thereon. Allowances for rent, fuel, and light are regulated by the revenue collected at the office as follows. Annual revenue, over $800 and up to $1,200. Annual allowance, $40. Over $1,200 and up to $1,600, $60 annual allowance. Over $1,600 and up to $2,000, $80 annual allowance. Over $2,000 and up to $3,000, $120 annual allowance, and so on. The allowance increasing $40 per annum for every $1,000 or fraction of $1,000 of early revenue. No allowance for rent is made at offices where the revenue is less than $800 per annum. The scale of salaries of railway mail clerks is as follows. On appointment, class 1, day $720, not $880. Class 2, day $600, not $720. Class 3, $480, not $600. After 2 years service in any class, day, class 1, $800, not $1,000. Class 2, day, $640, not $800. Class 3, day, $520, not $640. After 5 years service in any class, class 1, day, $800, not $1,100. Class 2, day, $720, not $880. Class 3, day, $560, not $700. After 10 years service in any class, class 1, day, $960. Class 1, not $1,200. Class 2, day, $800. Class 2, not $1,000. Class 3, day, $640. Class not, $800. In all cases where a railway mail clerk is entitled to an increase of salary, a special report should be made, and the Postmaster General's sanction obtained previous to the increased salary being entered on the monthly pay list. Railway mail clerks, in addition to their salaries, are entitled to 0.5 cent for each mile travelled whilst on actual duty. Until, however, a railway mail clerk is reported to the Postmaster General as fully competent to take charge of the mails, he is to be paid only 0.25 cent for each mile travelled. The scale of salaries of clerks employed in city offices is as follows. First class, from $1,000 to $1,600. Second class, from $900 to $1,100. Third class, from $600 to $800. Fourth class, from $400 to $520. In the second, third, and fourth classes, the clerks receive the lowest salary on appointment or promotion with an increase of $40 each year, until the higher salary is attained. In the first class, there is no annual increase, the salary which is fixed by the Postmaster General in each case having regard to the merits and services of the clerks and the relative importance of the duty entrusted to them. Letter carriers will be receive such salaries and allowances for uniforms as may from time to time fixed by the Postmaster General. Section 6. New Post Offices. In each report, an application for a new post office describes the locality in which it is proposed to establish the office, giving name of the township, number of lot and concession, stating whether front or rear of the concession, and county in which situated. In places where land is not so divided, give such particulars as may serve to indicate the exact position. State further the number of churches, schools, mills, stores, houses, or other buildings in the immediate neighborhood, the character of the surrounding land, whether well settled, and the estimated number of families that the office applied for would accommodate, its distance from all neighboring offices, its estimated personal revenue, the mode and frequency of the service proposed, the estimated annual cost, whether any previous application for a post office in the same locality has already been reported on, and other such information as may bear on the matter. With each report on an application for a new post office should be sent a sketch or tracing from the map of your division, showing as nearly as can be ascertained the position of the proposed office and mail route, and the offices and mail routes already in operation in its neighborhood. Section 7. Mail Arrangements. The principal object of all mail arrangements is to ensure the transit of the letters and papers to destination with the utmost possible dispatch. The main routes throughout the provinces should connect with each other as closely as it is possible. The branch routes should be so arranged as to form as close a connection as possible with the main lines. Throughout bags should be exchanged by all officers between which pass a large number of letters and papers, including travelling post offices on different routes. When, as a general rule, an office has a large number of registered letters for another office with which it is not exchanged a direct mail, the registered letters may be enclosed in a sealed, registered packet addressed to the office for which the letters are intended. The address of the packet, however, should, in all cases, be entered in the letter bill with which it is dispatched. When a packet is sent as above, it should be accompanied by a letter bill containing at foot an acknowledgement for registered letters. This acknowledgement should be filled up by the receiving office and returned to the dispatching office by the first post. Where large numbers of registered letters pass between two offices, it is desirable that bags secured with the lead seal should be used. An inspector should always be on the watch to ascertain what improvements can be made in the postal arrangements in his division. It should be his aim to anticipate the wants of the general public and to combine, as far as practicable, efficiency of service with economy of expenditure. Section 8. Mail Service. It is very essential that a strict supervision should be maintained over the performance of the mail service, that all delays and irregularities should be promptly checked, and when necessary, fines imposed and enforced. On all the important routes there should be suitable time bills, in which should be entered the hours of arrival and departure at each office. Names of the couriers and the number of mails received and delivered. These time bills should be carefully checked and filed away, the check clerk affixing his initials to each bill. You should be ready at all times to receive suggestions for improvements in the mail service, and if desirable, submit them for the consideration of the Postmaster General. Leather bags should, as a general rule, be used on stage routes. On the outlying routes, where the mails are exposed to the weather, waterproof canvas bags should be used. Section 9. Establishment of new routes or alterations in routes already in operation. In making reports on proposed new mail routes or alterations of existing routes, state clearly advantages to be obtained, additional cost per annum to be incurred, present revenue of the offices to be served, increased revenue which is estimated would result from the proposed additional mail facilities. Give tables also of the present and proposed routes, showing offices served and immediate intermediate distances. State also dates on which contracts which it is proposed to discontinue would terminate, provided previous notice were not given by the Postmaster General. With each report, send a sketch or tracing from the post office map of your division, showing all the offices affected by the proposed arrangements, denoting the lines of existing routes which it is recommended should be discontinued in blue, and the new routes which it is recommended should be established in red. All changes in mail service should, except in very special cases, take effect on the first day of each month. And I think I'm going to leave it there. If for some reason you found out the rules and regulations of the Postal Service that fascinating that you'd like to pick up where I'm leaving off, you can find General Instructions for the Guidance of Post Office Inspectors in the Dominion of Canada on Project Gutenberg at the link in the show notes. Thanks again for joining me on this episode of Sleepy Time Tales, the podcast designed around a bedtime story to help you to get a restful night. New episodes will be released every Sunday night to give you something fresh to help you rest in a new week. But make sure to subscribe in whatever service you use so that you get your new episodes whenever they come out. A reminder that the music for tonight is Sweet Night and Friends by Kumiko. Check out more of their work on their website, which you'll find linked in the show notes. Good night, and sweet dreams.